Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Pastor Ngwenya.
Greetings, my beloved brother, and greetings to the listeners.
Are you well, though?
Well, I'm quite well. I thank God for that. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much. We praise God for good health. Now, we are doing day four of five in our discussion about the world versus the kingdom. And those who are only joining us for the first time, man, you've missed out. We have actually been getting fed, getting information, insights, and beautiful, you know, biblical teachings from Pastor Ngwenya. Well, welcome if you're here for the first time. I do hope that you're going to be enjoying the conversations as much as we have been enjoying. Now, the kingdom of God often flips worldly logic on its head. Excuse me. In the world, the greatest rule and dominate. The greatest, they rule and dominate. In the kingdom, the greatest serve and lower themselves. That's really the twist. Now, the world celebrates revenge. The kingdom demands forgiveness. The world hoards wealth. The kingdom practices sacrificial generosity. Now, living this way makes you stand out, really. It makes you a true nonconformist, which can draw intense questions from people around you. Yet, this countercultural lifestyle is exactly how we become salt and light to a watching world. I want to discuss the courage it takes to live out the kingdom values in a society that mocks them. And once again, Pastor Ngwenya is here to help us to decipher these issues. Now, Pastor, why does living out kingdom values often feel upside down or counterintuitive to our natural human instincts?
Right. As you have highlighted, we know that natural human instincts, it's all about power. It's all about hoarding success. It's all about survival. Whereas the kingdom values directly challenge our natural human instincts. Through that is we have to think of others. We have to be humble. A typical example is with the account of the four lepers in the book of First Kings, if my memory serves me well. When they found food, you know, the prophet of God had said, by this time tomorrow. But the lepers had said, let's go out to the Syrian camp. And let's go and we rather die seeking something to eat because there was a drought, there was hunger. So in that case, when they got there, God had made miracles and the Assyrians ran away and they found the food and they started picking and taking. But then they remembered that, no, it's not all about us. This is the uniqueness of the kingdom values. It's not always about you. It's about thinking about others. You know, that's what turns the world upside down. And this issue that Christ taught us to forgive, you have highlighted that, as Peter asked Jesus, how many times should I forgive? Mm-hmm. And Jesus says 70 times 7 in Matthew chapter 18, verse 21 to 22.
Now, Matthew 5:3-12, the Beatitudes, lists kingdom traits like meekness and mercy. How do these traits contrast with the worldly power?
We know that the worldly power or the worldly traits, as we have highlighted before, their values are self-sufficiency, lovers of self, warmongers, lasciviousness, dominance, you know, in all areas, demand of respect. You know, you have to assert your authority forcefully, as we see with a certain country in North America. And you have to size control and is full of retaliation. But the kingdom trait teaches us meekness, being merciful, you know, the Beatitudes that are written in Matthew chapter 5, peacemakers, you know, place others above your needs. Mm. So this is the context of what Christ was teaching, that we should value others. We should be meek. We should be merciful. We should always seek peace. Even when Christ had not sinned, literally, there was nothing that even the Jews, even Herod and Pilate, could find Jesus wrong. But out of it, he sought peace always. When Peter drew out his knife and cut the ear of the soldier, Christ sought peace. And this is what the kingdom trade is all about.
Mm. Yeah. Now, how can a business owner practice kingdom counterculture when dealing with difficult or impossible employees, difficult clients or impossible employees?
Yes. A typical example is the dealing of Jacob and Laban. I just got this in relation to this topic. You know, Jacob had worked for the 7 years for the right wife. And then he was told, no, you ain't going to get her because you have to get the older sister. So the kingdom counterculture means leading with fundamental grace, you know, servant-hearted humility, uncompromising integrity rather than worldly merits of power and retaliation. So in this account, Jacob, if it was somebody else without the kingdom counterculture means, he would have retaliated and said, no, I ain't going to go there, Laban.
Yeah.
Give me my wife. We agreed. Even when it came to the animals, you know, God would bless him and then Laban will change his mind. So this is how we learn that we have to work with integrity, you know, at a point that he had to absorb the loss of flocks rather than to retaliate. You know, trusting God is the ultimate defender for us as it was for Jacob.
Yeah. Now, what are the social risks or costs a believer might face when they refuse to conform to worldly social norms?
The first one, as we speak about social norms, is isolation. That is the first thing. You will be isolated. That means the kind of people that you had thought that you would socialize with them. At this moment, they say, no. You are holier than thou. Stay there because you are a believer. You have got principles. You have got kingdom principles. So that is the first one. And then the next one is they would go to a point that if they seek to destroy you, it's character damage or reputational damage, you know, economical disadvantages and hostility. These are what we would stem out from the fundamental clash between secular values and biblical principles of truth, morality, justice. So as we look at Noah, you know, when he preached for the 120 years, you know, people ridiculed him and they rejected him and he was isolated in the building of the ark. And, you know, God was with him, Genesis chapter 6 and Genesis chapter 7. We also note the life of Daniel in Babylon, you know, his commitment to prayer life and refusal to conform to the king's decree. He had his enemies, you know, go to the king, report him, bring evidence, and he was thrown into the lion's den, but God saved him. This we find in Daniel chapter 6. So these historical examples that we find in the Bible can help us also today to navigate when we face such challenges in the world.
Yeah, man, and it's not easier because the world is not going to be kind at all to someone who's trying to uphold kingdom principles. And a kingdom, you know, so it really gets tough. But people have got to be prepared for that. If you're going to be taking those stances and principles, of course, those are the social risks that one may face. Now, how does a radical kingdom generosity break the power of materialism and greed that dominates our economy?
You know, Paul cautions the wealthy not to be arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Or place their hope in wealth, but to be generous. So he writes in a letter to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 to 19, where he speaks about we need to break the cycle of accumulation by positioning generosity as the way to take hold of the life that is truly life. So we need to know how we as God's chosen, we ought to be generous, You know, we don't need to hoard things and the power of materialism to show off. As I've seen in one or two instances, people, some even in the Adventist church, in the Christendom. Okay, let me move away from Adventism. In the Christendom, you know, they just want to show the power of what they have. You know, even in church decisions, in business meetings, in sessions, they want to hold the progress because they have what they have. So we need to move away, as Paul cautions Timothy. Thank you.
Now, how do we maintain then a counter-cultural stance without really being, self-righteous or legalistic or judgmental towards others in the world?
The first stance is we will be distinct from them, right, from the world's values. So, but we must be found under the grace of God, and we must maintain the truth always. So we need to focus on inner transformation rather than the outward rule keeping. What do I mean? We need to value relationships with others, you know, over the rules. The rules are there. We need to keep the rules. We need to obey fair and fine, but we need to value relationships. When Christ came, He came to value the relationships. You know, the Pharisees would see Jesus sitting with sinners. To them, it was unlawful for a Jew to be seen with sinners or to be seen with Gentiles. You understand? But Christ came to solidify relationships, you know. Legalism occurs when we reduce faith to a checklist of behaviors. So we need to migrate from focusing too much on the rules or the laws, but we need to build relationships. And then when we build relationships, then people would understand why are we so distinct as Adventists.
Man, now, before I let you go, Pastor, in what ways does Kingdom Community and Church Fellowship sustain us when we feel isolated because of our values?
We need to anchor our shared values, especially in this modern day and age, you know, by providing tangible encouragement during trials and tribulations or crucibles, you know, even offering mutual accountability. You know, we need to surround ourselves with fellow believers who fulfill God's design of a relationship that is strengthened and collective, you know, full of spiritual resilience. For example, if you go and study about a Polish priest, his name was Maximilian Kolbe. By the time when Hitler was persecuting Jews in Germany between 1936 up to 1944 or 45, you know, what he did was he would write articles, against what Hitler and the Nazi were doing in Germany, you know, persecution, killings of the Jews, to a point that he was arrested several times because he was focusing on the Kingdom Community and church fellowship, that we are Christians. We cannot keep quiet when things are not done properly by even people in the world, those that are powerful. So at one point, he took in refugees, you know, Jewish refugees who had run away from Germany. They were about nearly 2,000. And the Gestapo followed and they arrested him. And he was murdered in Germany. You know, if you go and read the whole account, it teaches us that we need to value others. We need to speak out. We need to know, the community must know that we are a church of God with who maintain and sustain God's standards wherever we are. Everyone is welcome. The Church of God is a place of refuge. Thank you.
You're a beautiful man. Thank you so much for these insights and a very important, difficult as though it may seem. However, it is doable because if we live for the kingdom, God is there to back us up in all things that we make decisions, especially in favor of the kingdom. Thank you so much, Pastor. Blessings to you.
Thank you. Stay blessed.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.